Jen Shaw.
And I'm Kate O'Reilly. You're listening to XOXO
JK,
a show about good stuff, real stuff, funny stuff. And this week, we're going to take a deep dive into feeling stuck.
Feeling stuck.
Yeah.
Burr, burr.
So we're going to talk a little bit about self-motivation, isolation, how that can lead to depression, and other issues. We're going to talk a little bit about a good article Jen found, the 10 beliefs that keep you stuck in life, and just dissect those out a little bit. And then just general expectations of how we feel as women, and what's expected of us, and what our roles look like, and at what age do we have to accomplish things, and all of the issues that we face.
I love it
that way. I do too. I'm really
I feel
excited.
Like I'm going to take a lot away from this podcast.
Well, episode. I think that, you know, I mean, without I saying too much, that, you know, this show idea was your idea, and for a good reason.
Oh, girl, let me tell you. I personally feel so stuck in like so many ways, and just really trying to figure it out. And I'm sure we all go through this like at multiple times in our lives. And I know I've been in this space before, but like, you know, I turned 38 this year. I don't feel like I don't have the stuff behind me that I want to have behind me at this point in my life. And like, I don't have the career that I want, and I don't know what the career that I want is. And I don't, so feeling that and not knowing how to go after something that you want. And I see all these amazing people in my life that are just doing like kick-ass jobs on so many things, you know, whether it's personal life or professional life. And I just think, wow, how do you, like, it's easy for me to see other people succeed, you know, like I don't have a problem with it. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. They can totally do that. But for whatever reason, it's really hard for me to picture myself being in that space, and you know,
I do, and I'm consistently inspired by other people. Like, a lot of the things that I have accomplished or decided I'm going to don't have to do with like, I say that I could get stuff done. I'm a self-starter in that way, but I'm not a self-starter in like the very beginning. Like, I see something else, and I'm like, wow, that is impressive, and I want it.
Yeah.
But I'm not a naturally jealous person or competitive. I don't have a competitive bone in my body. Sometimes I wish I had more. Yeah. Except when it comes to Scrabble. Just Scrabble.
Ooh, you would school me, girl.
I don't know. I think that word knowledge is, you know, often varied. But anyway, I feel like it's some of that stuff is fine to take from other people and be like, I'm going to put myself on that track or a similar track. Yeah. And it's good to, you know, there's that saying that everything is a remix, and that you're, you know, that you can take, you know, ideas, as long as obviously they're not copywritten, patented, and morph them into your own. And, but really, I think that at the base lies worthiness.
Amen to that. I'm doing preach hands emoji.
Preach hands emoji.
Yep, I'm doing it because I think you're totally right. And that's one thing I've been really working on a lot is, if you don't feel worthy of good things, then when good things happen to you, which good things happen to all of us. I know that good things have happened to me.
Right.
But it's hard to accept those things because you mostly are just like, how the hell did I end up here? Like, I'm not supposed to be here.
Right.
This doesn't feel good.
Like classic imposter complex.
Yes.
Things.
Yes, yes, yes.
So the feeling of worthiness are deeply rooted in your childhood and how much, you know, you got what you needed. Yeah. And that is different for every single person.
Yes.
Some people, like, you know, they're given like too much attention, and really what they wanted was to be alone more. And some people are given too many clothes when really they're the kinds of people that like really do better with less. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm not saying it's always lack of things. Sometimes it's abundance that screws people up. And so those, like, there's worthiness is so layered. And so much of the work that we do, if we, you know, let's say we were given 50% of what we needed and 50% you know, in a not what we needed. And we're able to somehow reconcile that, like, say we have a roommate in college who leaves us alone. Or sometimes, you know, like something will happen where we have a job right away that just makes a lot of sense in how much responsibility you have. And you're able to like heal through those things. But it's like if you're not able to, or if you had like maybe a theory, let's say this is a theory, but like 70% or more things you were parented wrong, or you had too little or too much of something, or you were had experienced trauma as a child, which could include yelling, looks, you know, you could experience like weight trauma or food related trauma, emotional, you could experience physical trauma. Oh. Like trauma is also on the spectrum of getting what you need or what you don't need. I mean, no kid needs to be hit or screamed at, but sometimes it can just be like, you know, someone who already is thinking about feeling too big in their skin, whose mom gets on the scale every day, and then it's compounded that way. So, you know, those things are super personal, but I feel like that those layers of worthiness then, you know, a lot of them can get worked out when we get into a serious relationship or end up getting married, because you're suddenly like living with someone who you're being vulnerable with. And but then, you know, there's, I mean, most of my friends haven't done that yet. And so then they find themselves, you know, in therapy. And I did it. I actually had it happen at the same time where I was really close to someone, who I ended up marrying. And then I learned and realized within that I was repeating a behavior. And that happens too. And so I wasn't able to reconcile that stuff in my early 20s. So you end up repeating a behavior because you know what you know.
Yep.
So
you know, that's exactly it. You know what you know. Yep.
Yeah. So so I was shortly after I had my first baby in 2003, I was diagnosed with, I went on a trip that I always went on for my birthday in May. He was born in August. And then the following May, I went on this birthday trip. And I thought, when I get back, I'm going to feel so much better. I just need a break. And when I got back, I felt worse. Mm-hmm. And then I had realized that's a long story. But I was shortly thereafter diagnosed with acute postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. And I was grateful to be diagnosed with that, you know, later, because it's really an acceptable form of depression, especially 10 years ago.
Yep.
We weren't talking about depression as much as we are now at all, or mental health issues. So we, you know, and that forced me to sort of like figure out what was up, you know, like why was I depressed? And, you know, in therapy, and I was medicated right after that because they wouldn't let me leave the hospital. They said, you either stay in the hospital or you accept this prescription and leave under the care of Joel and my parents. And so it was, you know, I had a thought about hurting myself, and it was really rock bottom, and it wasn't a thought I had consciously.
Yep.
So it was a thought that kind of flashed into my mind. And since then, I've read, you know, thousands of stories just like it. Brooke Shields wrote a book that said she had this. It was perfect case scenario.
Is it like, I don't know too much about postpartum. I mean, I obviously know that it exists, but is it like a hormonal thing? Like, is it like the change in hormones in your body? Just like.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they think, but. You know,
they don't know. Right. Obviously,
it is a change of hormones, but I feel like it has to do with like being responsible for another human life.
And how terrifying that is.
And it's terrifying. And also like being like realizing you have to be OK. Mm-hmm. Like you have to work some stuff out to be able to do this right and well, because otherwise you're just repeating the cycle. Right. Yeah. So I think, getting into therapy then was the best thing that ever happened to me, because I was able to start reconciling that stuff and realizing that I didn't get a lot of what I needed. And I got to say out loud that everyone I know is starting therapy. I say this too, but I'm like, get to your family of origin stuff. In the first few appointments, because the longer you wait, the more money you're just throwing away.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I've been going to see my therapist now for 5 years, and we're just now.
So awesome.
Yeah. Well, and we've done, I mean, I've come a long way in a lot of things. We've talked about my parents in depth quite a bit, but we're now sort of getting to like what it was like growing up, like the kids stuff.
Yeah. And you have to do it when you're ready.
Yeah. Just to try to, but I mean, it's weird. Like the kind of stuff that
you don't realize is kind of weird or whatever, you know, until.
Yeah. Well, and admitting that stuff and talking about it out loud feels like betrayal in a lot of ways. Like saying, like, you know, my parents weren't great at this, or, you know, it feels like, because they're your parents. And so, and betrayal is a really tricky emotion. It's really tricky to not feel like you're completely erasing your identity in those moments. So,
well, it's one of the interesting things that has come up is that, like, I've had limited success kind of in my life, and I know that I'm capable of, like, rationally, I know that I'm capable of great things, but for whatever reason, like, there's like this internal voice. It's like, well, And it's, and we're trying to figure out what the cause of that is. You know, if it's like, I don't like, why did it take me 16 years to graduate from college? Like, really? There wasn't like some huge barrier that stopped me from doing it. I just didn't do it. It's like, I got all the way to the end. And then I was like, bah. And that happens a lot where it's like, I just spent 7.5 years doing stand up comedy, daily grind. And I'm now just kind of like, well, it's like, why do you invest all this time doing something where it could actually like be something? And then you're, and then you get to a point where you're not interested, or you feel like you can't, or like, you know, looking for a new job, or the thought of going out on my own. Like, this isn't groundbreaking stuff. Like, people do this every day.
Yeah. Well, I feel like
it's just,
what's your definition of success though? Like, so I think like my definition of success is being calm and being happy.
Yeah.
And I don't have any lofty goals in that thing. I just, I don't want to be in a panic. I don't want to race places. I want to be like, when I feel like I have some downtime, I don't want to be like paralyzed with stress and anxiety over what I haven't done.
You must know what it's like to live my life.
Yeah. I mean, I do. I used to do that nonstop. Girl. But I think, you know, you really do have to examine like what it was, even if you feel reluctant to, you have to examine like, what wasn't I given that I needed? And then try and figure out, am I okay with that? And then all the idea that like, you have to like, you know, like keep building something until it's bigger and best and you have a show or a lot of money or whatever that thing is really kind of an unhealthy way of looking at stuff. And I, when I really realized, like, I had a lot of success when I started my business right away, and I became like this, I had like a magazine column, and this, I ran this like worldwide art show, and then I ended up doing like this high profile congressional campaign. And you know what? I was like, after the, especially the congressional campaign was over, I just started like completely rejecting high profile things, and like just even the idea that it was now my job to build big things. And it took me, you know, a year or more to be okay with just doing good work that matters and not building.
I love that about you.
I read this, finally read this article last year, came out around my birthday, that was called about, it was, I don't know, remember what it was called exactly, but it was about not building an empire. That not every woman needs to aspire to build something like world changing. It can change lives.
Yeah.
It could change one person's life or 10 or just your own, but that you don't need to necessarily build this enormous thing that works all the time. Like, maybe I want to dive into something again that's high profile, but I don't have any obligation to anyone else to do so.
Yeah. And I think the thing I struggle with is like, ultimately, like your bottom line, and I don't know if this is for everybody, but the way I think is like, the most basic thing is you want to make your parents proud, you know, like you want your parents to be proud of you. And like, that's just not a thing I'm ever going to get. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not. So
I'm coming to terms with things.
Yeah,
that you're just,
totally. It's like, you just got to do you. Do you, boo. Do you. I'm a do me, you do you, you know? And that's probably why I live here versus where the rest of my family lives, like in Milwaukee. Like, there's a reason for that. So I can like do what I want to do here and not feel the.
Well, and identifying that major moves like living away from your family is a significant thing, is significant progress in identifying that, you know, you can't live near them and be healthy.
Yeah.
And so take that as a thing that happened. And this is for everyone, not just you. But like, if you already have made moves that you, like, I do that too, where I sweep things under, like, okay, Chuck did that, let's move on. But it's like making that move and deciding to live away from your family is a significant life event that should be like, remember when you were in fifth grade and you did these like life timelines, like my parents, you know, had my brother, my grandpa died, this and that. Like, we don't do that in our adult lives. And I feel like a lot of it is lost because we're living in this, you know, like faster than, you know, lightning world where everything kind of happens at a rate that is too, you know, too quick to stop and add significance to, like, you already made a huge thing by moving away. Like, I, when I was, you know, struggling with depression and just keeping up with myself, like showering and like making sure that the baby was okay and those things, like realizing that I couldn't talk to my sister for 2 hours on a Saturday morning anymore. And that was, there was a lot of mourning in that, but that I had let it go on too long. And so I ended it abruptly, where I just refused to do it anymore because I didn't have the tools in my toolbox to explain to her why, you know, why I, you know, couldn't do it anymore. And she, for, you know, it doesn't matter necessarily. Maybe she could have kept up that schedule had she had kids as well. But she didn't have kids. And so I felt like there was some sort of like lack of identifying, which, you know, and knowing very well that it was my choice and that I entered into this pregnancy, you know, willingly and planfully. And so, like, I ended it abruptly. And so it's like, you know, knowing that I don't want to be unkind, but not knowing what else to do, it caused like a riff, right? So then you're thinking, you know, I really don't want that drama at all. I don't want to cause it. I don't want it around me. And then you think, like, okay, that's something I value, is people that aren't dramatic.
Absolutely.
So, and then just wherever you write stuff down or not, if you're the type that kind of checks things off and then they're done, like, put that somewhere where you can see it. I don't want dramatic people in my life. Like, so this all ties back to the question of worthiness and how that works. And it's like, you know, if you have to write it down, or if you can just know it inside of you, like, you know, that you're a human being on earth and that makes you worthy of love, and no other outside factors, no choices you've made, no upbringing, nothing else contribute to that, except for just knowing that if you're alive on earth, you're deserving of love and happiness. And then, you know, like, knowing, like, okay, what makes me lovely and happy? And then starting to make that list.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. But I did it because, and I hope this isn't the case for everyone, but I did it because I had a thought about ending my life.
Yeah.
And nothing is, you know, I mean, nothing will make you, if you don't end up dying, more significantly examine what is contributing to that sadness and whatever opposite of lovely is, ugliness. So that worthiness stuff. I went to, a couple weeks ago, went to jump school at Coco.
Yeah.
Which is, Coco is a local place that houses small companies, entrepreneurs, solos, who want to work together in a cooperative space. And they have three locations in Minneapolis now. And
does everybody really know each other there?
Like, not really. I mean, there's like lots of like Venn diagram crossover.
Yeah.
But they offer this school called Jump School. And so, I mean, like, I introduced myself saying, I've taken a couple jumps already. Like, I got divorced after, you know, 8 years of staying at home, at being a stay-at-home mom. And then I, like, started this company. And then I, like, left the company to run a congressional campaign and, you know, or not left my own company, but put that on hold. So, but I was feeling lately that, you know, things were getting a little bit out of control and I didn't have a clear focus of what I wanted to work on after being laid off. Like, I took a lot of work that
I love that you took this fulfilling. Summer.
Yeah, I took the summer off to swim and mourn and just do whatever. My thoughts were too mixy. Yep. Nobody wanted me to work on their stuff then.
Yeah,
it was too much. But you know, and then like getting back to it, I was like, yeah, I can do that work, and it's good. See, solid
that work. Right there, we go. Yeah, I can do that work. Like that, I love that. I love that because, like, I've been looking at, you know, different jobs and things and posting and like ideas of what I want to do, and I think I don't know if I can do that. You know,
well, you have to be inspired by either like the company or the work in general. That's so let that be your guiding force, you know, like not can I actually like check things off in a day and do to do's, but like,
can I handle constituent relationship management system? Yes, I can do that.
That's like, do I want to do
this? That's exactly it. And, do I want to do this?
I don't think it's so radical a thought.
Okay, because I feel like there's people in this world like you and other people who actually really enjoy what they do for a living. And like, that is what I actually want. Like, that's my end goal, is I really want to love what I do and want to love who I do it with. That is what I want. And I know that that's capable of happening. I just, it's like,
that's good.
It's like point A to Z, but I don't know what the things are in the middle. You know what I mean? It's like, I can see that, but I have no idea how to get there.
Well, put that out there, but then, you know, do the, like, figure out what B is.
Ooh.
But don't figure out what B through M are.
Just B.
Like, just figure out B, and then figure out C, and then all of a sudden you're at M, like, say on June 1st, and you're like, oh, Z doesn't seem so far away anymore. And the yeah. B, you know, honestly, B through H are really of getting unstuck, and that just applies to not just work.
Well, you know? That's like this this article that I found, the Huffington Post one.
Oh, yeah.
The 10 beliefs great. That keep you stuck in life. I when I pulled this up and I was talking to you about it, I was like, 10 beliefs, all of which are mine.
Yeah. I know you really had a like
yeah,
a
yeah, it's like every single one of them. I'm like, holy cow, this is where we're at.
Well, I really liked it. Because I found the same thing. Like, I found 6 or 7 that mm-hmm. either I have been through recently or am still struggling with. So we'll link to this article in the show notes, but we're going to tackle a couple of these.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, identifying, like, what's real? What's not logical? What's even maybe just true?
Yep.
Do you want to go first?
Yeah. One of the ones I really liked was... you believe that you can't pursue your dreams.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, like when you're little and they're like, you can be anything you want to be. But then you have like a mortgage and car payments yeah. and stuff. And you're like, actually, and, you know, for me, it's literally there's nobody else around that's like, it's just me. It's just, this is where we're at. So like, if I don't do it, nobody else is going to do it. So like, pursuing my dream doesn't necessarily feel feasible, because I still got to do all the stuff. And I'm not that great at doing all the stuff as it is without pursuing a dream. So imagine,
yeah,
you know.
But you changed your life. I want to just interject that in a big way by, you know, going on this CrossFit journey.
Yes. Thank you for that. So, thank you, know, you
like,
for that.
Maybe
that,
just yes. dissecting that down into yeah. like, how did I actually do that? Did I like, okay, I bought clothes. I made sure I had yeah. the right gear. I found out the schedule and whether or not yep. it would work with my thing. Like, those are the things that yep. make, you know, like new habits or dreams or whatever you're trying to make happen come true.
It's funny because like, sometimes I think like footwear. I would love to do that all the time. I would, but like, what a weird thing, you know?
You want to be a trainer?
I mean, I would love to work with people in the way that they've worked with me, you know? Like,
cool.
In that realm, I feel like, oh, just, it's just awesome. And, but like, you know, I don't know. That wasn't like a dream necessarily that I ever had. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's just like a thing that I'm like, oh, this is pretty sweet.
Or just like seeing people through yes. breakthroughs.
Yes.
Even if it's not in a gym.
Yes.
But like, that kind of work holds value in your heart or wherever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, some of this can get crunchy, and I don't want that to be a turnoff, but it's like, those are the things that like they talk about in this.
Yeah. Like, selling copiers isn't really a thing. That's a dream of mine.
Yeah. Right? But it could be like, you know, if you're selling copiers and you continue to solve problems for people.
Yeah.
True, I don't know. I mean, true, like, there's value in all sorts of different work. But yeah, it is really important to be like, I don't want to work under fluorescent lights.
No. Or like in a low ceiling office building.
That's a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, write, like, open a Google Doc.
It is so my thing.
And write these things down. Like, what yeah. do I do want and what I don't want? And then just see how close you can get to it, even if it's not perfect.
Yeah. And then I would say, like, the other one that really resonated with me too was that like, you believe that you have to be perfect. Mm. Like, I definitely know that I'm not perfect. So like, it's not that, but it's like, you just feel like you have to have everything together all the time, you know, like in the world of friends, and especially like in the comedy world, you know, it's like, that's sort of,
yeah.
I feel like the place that I was put, you know, and I don't, like, I definitely
am not and perfect and struggle with a lot of things, but it's like, you know, this was kind of apparent when I had my little situation last December where I kind of lost control of everything. It was because like I had managed in that space for so long where it was like, you have to keep it together. Like you, this is your job. This is who you are. Like, this is how people see you. Like you have to keep it together. And then suddenly like you really aren't keeping it together. And like, that's okay. But for whatever reason, like that's the pressure I put on myself. Yeah. Like,
and surrounding yourself with people that care enough about you when you lose your cool or you're late or you're like letting a few things go that will be like, Jen, I know you. I know this isn't what you're really like, and I understand. And like, they provide a soft place to fall in those moments.
Yes.
Instead of friends that are like, whatever, I take that personally. Like, my scrapbooking party was really important to be at today. And the fact that you weren't there is a personal affront. Mm-hmm. And like, those are the kind of people that you just are like, you know, emoji hands. Like, emoji hand, no.
Right.
I am standing up for myself and realizing that you are a dramatic person whose life revolves around.
I don't need it.
Calling people out. Yep. And you know what? I don't value that. My life revolves around being compassionate, understanding, vulnerable, and all the things that people have shown to me through these like last, you know, 10 years that have been really, or 5 years even, that have been really hard.
Absolutely.
And I had friendship fallouts. It wasn't pretty, but like I just allowed them to like drift away instead of challenging it, because I get it. Like, I don't know if I wanted to be friends with me then. That's cool. I think that anyone who doesn't like me, and this is one of the ones I chose at the end, people that don't like me or don't like the way I write or don't like the way I talk, and like, they're going out to find stuff that they do like.
You're so good at that. Like, you're so good at like making that, distinction. Way. But I love that about you, is because you're like,
thanks.
Good for you. Like, that's great. Like, I'm going to do me, you do you. Like, that you're so good at that. And that's one thing I really admire, is that you kind of just, I mean, yeah, we all, you get little pings of whatever.
Yeah.
But it's what you, how you process that. If you just like let it roll off your back, or, you know, let it sting you. Like, who cares if so-and-so doesn't like you? Like, there's plenty of people I don't like, but it doesn't mean I don't like wish them well in life. Like, it's not like,
And that's the difference.
Yeah. It's not like I just don't choose to spend my time with them. That's a different story.
Yeah. Or don't choose to read how they write. Like, there's writers that you like, and there's writers that you don't like. And, you know, I just think of it in a way that like, I'm never going to know, you know, probably know Brené Brown personally.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I like her a lot, and I want to have more of her stuff in my world. So I subscribe to her newsletter and I follow her, and I read everything she publishes. Yeah. But
I
it's like
her a lot too.
There's like writers that I'm like, man, I do not like the way she talks about this. I don't like the sound of her voice. It is 100% not personal. So I think of it in that I just apply those same principles to people that I know. Or people that I interact with. And it's like, you know what? We're never going to collaborate. We don't understand the same things. We don't have the same values or end goal. And then there's some people you meet at work or wherever that you're just like, oh my gosh, we got to do this.
Soulmates.
Like you and I. Yes, really. I mean, like when we met, we were just like, we got to get this done.
Done.
We got to do this podcast. There was so much like natural energy. Mm-hmm. And like, those are your people.
These are your people.
The people that stand up and, you know, if you make a comment about something, you know, on Twitter, and the people that are like, I think the opposite, and this is why, blah, blah, blah. You're like, okay, cool. Like, like, why don't you post what you love?
Bro.
Like, why would you post opposite of what I am currently like jamming on?
Right.
I will never understand that.
Right.
And unless it's something like completely offensive, like someone says something way out of line that offends, you know, people that I love and believe in, I would never approach something with the opposite opinion, because life is just too effing short. Just too short.
It really is.
Yeah. It like really so is. Just continue to put out that stuff that you want back. So I want like support, and I want love, and I want joyfulness, and I want like interesting stories about animals who love each other.
Oh my gosh.
Like goats and pigeons and
deer and dogs.
And dogs. And yeah. Like, ooh. I want funny, and I want to laugh. And I for sure know now that I'm not here on earth to suffer.
I'm gonna consciously think about that in my day to day.
What you put out is what you get back. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with everything.
Mm-hmm.
it's the same in your, you know, social media is the same as interacting at a party or a gathering or
yeah.
It's like if you're constantly like quacking at people and like opposing them, and it's the same feelings. Yep. People have the same feelings that they do online that yep. they do in person. And so
I love that statement. People have the same feelings online as they do in person.
Yeah. I like, I mean, that. It's really, if you think about it, you think about saying this to someone's face versus online, like yep. they're going to feel the same feelings. It's a human person with fingers typing.
Yep.
So
you're absolutely right.
But this, that number 10 in this article that we'll link in the show notes is you, a reason that sometimes you're stuck is that you believe that you have to be liked by everyone.
Yep.
Not everyone will like you. Like you can look at 10 people around you and think, yep, not everyone likes her. Not everyone likes her. Not everyone him. Not everyone likes my mom. Like it's, you can do personal, impersonal.
Right.
You could do Gilbert Gottfried. Mm-hmm. Be like, not, you know, half people love him, half people don't like him. And it's the same with right. every human person.
It's and
that,
very true.
Why would you put that pressure on yourself?
Right.
You're not putting it on anybody else.
Oh, can you just be my new therapist?
I really do. I am really motivated by this kind of work, mm-hmm. doing this work with people. And it's funny that you brought that up because I'm thinking right now about not doing as much of the work I'm doing, like mm-hmm. writing and stuff, and focusing more on just transitions. And it does, my work right now borderlies on life coach stuff, mm-hmm. because I always go through the motions with people when they're making choices about even just like websites.
Projects,
and,
yep.
You know, like, what is this the kind of work that you want to continue doing? Is this the best work we can do with the resources we have? Like, I'm not doing like things halfway.
Which is what I also, another thing that I love about you, like you just, like you have the wherewithal to just go balls to the wall. I love that.
Well, it feels good to have the clarity to make choices based on what energizes me.
Yeah.
Instead of just make choices based on like, instead of like, I have to do that yes. because I need the cash.
Oh my God.
I mean, because really, oh my God, it's a vocal fry time. Once an episode. I love it. But yeah, it is. I think part of it was that when I had like the friendship breakdown after the divorce, which is very yeah. normal. And you really find out, like, you know, like the people that stick by your side are the people that you want there. And the people that fade away should be allowed to fade away, because otherwise you're bringing drama and stuff. And so I had the opportunity to like really figure out like who to surround myself with, and then like how I wanted to spend my time, because yeah. I was staying at home for, you know, 9 years, and suddenly I had like half a week of free time. It was really rough in the middle there. Like when I started to do that, I like every Sunday night I would just sob. Mm. I had no idea how to spend my time
right
at all. And it was really hard. And so kind of being able to build that up from scratch.
But I mean, was a good what thing. You're doing too is like such a great example for your kids as well, because I know, like, I look at my parents and, like, you know, I think for them, like, we were kind of most of their life. And once we got old enough to leave the house, you know, they didn't have anything anymore. And then that creates like a whole nother set of problems for them.
Yeah, and your kids are worried about you then, like.
Yeah, but I mean, you're also setting an example for your kids. And I tell my friends this all the time, that I love this about them, because they're showing their kids that you're people too. You know, you have interests and in jobs and things that you love to do and things that make you happy, and you do those things, and that makes it okay for your kids to feel like it's okay for them to do those things too.
Yeah.
And like that, huge. I think, is a huge lesson, and one probably why I struggle with it, because it's like, you know, not necessarily the example that was set for me, but obviously I'm an adult and I can choose my own adventure. It's just conflicted along the yeah. way for whatever reason.
Yeah. So. And there's like, I mean, I don't want to in any way purport to have like things figured out, because there, because I don't.
Like, well,
I have some right. of it, you know, and there are times where it's like I come home and I'm like, oh my God, everything is a mess. And I haven't like mopped in 6 weeks, and you know, whatever success means to you.
Let's go take a nap.
Well, like, I like to be organized because I find that it reduces my anxiety. Mm-hmm. So, like, being, like, hyper-organized makes me feel like I could be like, yes, I will go out for a beer with you. I've been dying to see you.
Right.
And not feel the opposite, which is, like, I really need to stay home. I should. Like, those shoulds are so
I should so wash toxic. My bathroom floor.
Yeah, or whatever. And then you end up like binging on Netflix and eating a pint of ice cream because you're so, you know, like
paralyzed
by your thoughts and, you know, not being worthy enough to see your friends. Like, these are just basic rights. So,
well, it's like tonight. I was Sunday night. I was scheduled to be part of this great show tonight, but I bailed. I was like, I can't. It's too much. Yep. It's too much. I have too much anxiety around the fact that I haven't had time to really, like, I haven't given myself time to be creative and work on new stuff. So I don't want to show up there and not have new stuff to do. And also, like, I haven't had 1 second of downtime this weekend yet. It's Sunday at 3:15, you know. It's been nonstop. Get up in the morning and go all day yesterday, Friday night shows, last night shows. I did get to take a shower yesterday afternoon, so that was pretty exciting. But it's like, I literally can't do it. And I would be like, I had anxiety thinking about it all week, actually.
I think that it's like the sort of bailing epidemic that's happening right now is a big deal because we are overcommitting because we have more access to events and everything.
Why is that? Is it like fear of missing out stuff? I mean, what is the deal? I don't know. I found that I am a person now who drives in the car without listening to the radio. Like, I don't have any sound on. I just have complete silence.
Because you're craving that so much.
And like, I haven't turned the TV on in my house in, you know, as you know, months, mostly because it didn't work. But like, why didn't I fix it?
Yeah, I remember going through that where I was like carving things out wherever I could find them.
Like silence and just sort of that. But I used to, I mean, like, music is a huge thing for me. And, like, I don't even, it's like no radio. I've got, you know, Spotify that I can listen to in my car. It's like I could listen to literally anything I wanted to at any particular time. And I choose to not listen to anything.
So it's probably a sign that you may need to create more of that isn't driving. Because driving, I mean, I find driving incredibly stressful.
Yeah.
And I don't, so I go to, like, one, I mean, I don't go to much anymore. But, like, I do stuff with my close friends. I know for sure I like small groups. Mm-hmm. I'm really overwhelmed in large groups.
Yeah.
So I can handle, like, a large group, like, maybe once a month.
It's hard. It takes a lot out of you. It
takes a lot of it. Like, like a wedding. Like, I need to know that I have the whole Sunday to just, like, veg. And after seeing lots of people at a wedding, and it's always, like, a little bit of social weirdness there. And so,
it's weird. Is that just, like, growing up, though? I mean, like, it's so different from like how I was 10 years ago.
Well, I think it's just adding those layers of knowing what you prefer and how you want to spend your time. So then, you know, that's why, like, you know, half people leave after you have cake at a wedding because they're like, this is 3 hours of my Saturday. I don't care what it is. I saw the ceremony. I saw this. I don't care to dance.
But even if it's open bar.
Well, some people don't value drinking.
Oh. I'm totally kidding. I'd be like, I'm staying for the open bar.
Yeah. I don't, I mean,
for my one drink, that's all I can handle.
Right. My one real vodka drink.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But you get to do that during the cocktail hours usually. And I actually really love dancing and I don't get as many chances as I do that I used to, you know, to go out. Yeah. So I used to like to go to Transmission and dance, you know, like Wednesday night.
Totally.
Jake Rude. And then just like plan like kind of a quieter Wednesday. But I just can't. I can't do it anymore. And so when I love going to weddings and dancing. I think it's so much
too.
Fun. Yeah. This was one that stuck out to me too. Yep. You believe that you have to spend time with people who aren't healthy for you. So like for whatever reason, if they become healthy or not healthy for, you know, they got married, they like to drink more than you do. They are like what I call legacy friends, like people you feel like you have to spend time with because you've been friends for a long time. And they're kind of sucking the life out of you. So this doesn't have to be a dramatic thing. It doesn't have to be a breakup. You can just start saying no to them. God. Like, say, oh, and if in the beginning you have to say, no, I'm busy that day. You know, I would avoid telling even white lies when I could because I find myself having to back up the lie then with another lie. And I don't like the way that feels like for a person that, you know, can like easily like worry about what people think and and just that thinks a lot. I don't like to have to think about those things and like planning for them. So if you can just say like not give details and say I'm busy that day and then just let it go. It doesn't have to. I think that's what most people are afraid of the most is like a significant event where you're breaking up with a friend. But you can just like slowly back away yep. over time and start new traditions, like fill the time so you don't feel like you're missing out on something, like yep. fill the time with something that really feeds what you're missing. Like if it's, you know, you want to, you know, go out and drink more craft beer, you want to spend more time with this new group of friends you mm-hmm. have, like try and fill it, but also know that you can say no to that too. You don't have to fill it with stuff. You mm-hmm. can fill it with television, reading, yep. sleeping, or cleaning your closet, or whatever would make your kind of home base better. But that those legacy friendships are really tricky.
That's one thing I've really noticed over the last, like, you know, I kind of go through like cycles
yeah.
of that where it's like, oh, okay, yep, this isn't working for me anymore. And I like friendship is not 50-50. I get that. You know, it's like,
it's very fluid.
Yep. It's very fluid as it should be, but, you gotta take care of yourself too. And, yeah, I used to be a quantity versus quality type of person. And mm-hmm. I'm so opposite of that now. Like,
yeah.
Literally I'll be like, I have a small group of friends too, you know, yeah. and people always are under the perception that that's opposite, but I think it's like, who do you call if you had like something happen?
Yeah.
Who's on your list of people that you would call? It's probably really small.
Yeah. And that's like, that's good. I'm grateful.
Yeah. I'm grateful for that too. And because it's real and it's genuine and like you can trust that. Yeah. It's tough. Like people used to say to me like, oh, how long am I going to last in your life? You know, well, that particular person and I are not friends anymore, thankfully, but like,
what a harsh question.
Sure. Thank you for that. And it was like, there's a reason. And I think for us too, you know, friendships aren't all lifelong. That's just not how it works.
They're not.
You grow and change and you maybe you switch jobs and you know, sometimes those sustain and become like the real deal, but you just have to know like what's good for you and put yourself in situations where you feel good both giving and getting.
Mm-hmm. And let people, like if you notice that people are not wanting to be friends with you anymore, like being graceful about mm-hmm. their exit too.
Yeah.
Can make, you know what I mean? Like just the world work a little right. bit better. And I don't want to talk too much about this article, but there was a great article recently in the New York Times about what you learn in your 40s. And neither Jenna or I are 40 yet, but
I'm darn close.
And that that maybe we could learn a little bit by applying things about what we could learn in our 40s, in our 20s and 30s,
yep.
and get there a little bit faster. And just great, like forgiving your exes and and for whatever reason, because forgiveness is owned by the forgiver.
Yep.
It's not about the person being forgiven. And that there's no such thing as grownups. And that, you know, that they're... You don't have to like everything, that you shouldn't buy clothes that don't fit.
I love that one.
That saying no without an explanation is an incredibly empowering sentence.
I like this one too. It's okay if you don't like jazz.
I know. And then the article is sort of funny too, which made me believe it more. But we'll link to that in the show notes. I just think it gets down to like sort of the nitty gritty of why women or any, this is written by a woman, get to 40 and be like, oh my God, yep. 40 is unbelievable. You just agreed. Know so much about what you want and so much. And then also so much about what you don't want. So we'll link to that and let us know if you've had a particular experience with being stuck and what things that you, even small, tiny steps, like instead of shopping on Saturday mornings when the grocery store is insane,
oh my God.
Started shopping on Tuesday afternoons at 1 after my lunch break.
Mm-hmm.
And, or things like just little things that change your life in a significant way, because it doesn't have to be a big sweeping momentous occasion right. to make change and get unstuck. It can be something really small or something that you just do to care more for yourself.
Absolutely.
Make the world a little, this very hard world, harsh world too, a little softer.
You're so wise.
I have been through so much hard stuff in the last 10 years. Yeah. Like it's because I just happened to do it all at once and not over time.
Yep.
And I don't think I wouldn't describe myself that way quite yet, but I was able to find a lot of clarity in how depressed I was and be able to build things from scratch and then kind of write them down along the way. So then I remember them, because I'm totally the type that will go, did that, and like just like let it, I don't know, fade it away into oblivion.
Until you hit it again.
And then have people around me, like you and other friends and family members, who say like, that was a significant thing, or I really felt inspired when you did that. So those are the kind of people I have surrounding me too, which, I mean, if anyone gets credit, it's them. Truly.
Gosh, you're so kind.
So having like them or our relationship be strong enough so they can say things that are both hard and supportive, and me take them with the same.
And you can hear it.
Yeah. Well, you're that amazing. This was awesome. I'm so glad you wanted to talk about it.
I feel like I'm just got like a giant pep talk.
Good.
Thank you for that.
Good. Well, at least you could, you know, leave this energized and decide.
Go start the rest of my life.
Go start the rest of your
life. The first day of the rest of my life. Go to the dog park.
And maybe even just the rest of your Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Take a nap.
Well, we appreciate you joining us today.
You're the best. I mean this, though. This, I know that sounded facetious, but I really think that you are.
I think that you are.
Aww.
We have a good complimentary with an E thing.
The yin and the yang.
Where you remind me to sometimes not be so serious.
And you remind me to be a good person.
Aww. Well, this is Kate, and you can find me at clever-kate.com or on Twitter at cleverkate.
And this is Jen, and you can find me online at jenshaw.com or on Twitter at jenshaw. And you can find this podcast at mathishard.net or anywhere you listen to podcasts, including iTunes. Improv.
XOXO.
JK.